to The Buzz, the official podcast of the Jazz Journalist Association. I'm your host, Rick Mitchell, and I'm here with my fellow board member, Neil Tesser. We're both longtime music critics, jazz critics, as well as jazz radio programmers. And today we're going to be talking about, do jazz critics and jazz radio programmers listen to music differently than other people? And by other people, I mean non-professional listeners. And do jazz critics and jazz radio broadcasters listen to music differently than each other? Neil, why don't you give us a little bit of your own background, and then let's start trying to answer these questions.
Sure, Rick. It's good to be here. Well, I've been writing about jazz since college, so we're talking a little over 50 years. And it was in college that I started doing a jazz radio program. And while I haven't done a program consistently, I haven't been on the air every year. I have been at many radio stations over the years, and it does span that whole time. So I'm familiar, certainly, with the way I listen to music as a writer, maybe differently from the way I listen to music when I'm thinking of programming a lineup for a radio show. And I'm also fairly cognizant of how other people tend to listen to music, just from conversations I have with people I know, people I run into in clubs, people who have heard something that I did on the radio or read something that I wrote. And I can't really completely put myself back into the mindset of before I was doing any of these things with a professional goal in mind. But I do have a sense from talking to other people what that entails. What about you?
Well, I started similar to you. I think you're 1 year older than I am, maybe. I started writing about music when I was in college, and I started doing radio programming when I was in college. I started doing jazz radio programming specifically after I got out of college, mid-70s. I basically educated myself about jazz in part through the library at the radio station where I was working. And then when I started writing for the daily paper, it was a learning on the job experience.
I mean, I think anybody who started fairly early, like in college, you're making it up as you go along. In my case, I had done a classical radio show my first year in college. I came back the next year and they said, well, we gave that away. I said, well, what do I do? They said, well, there's the jazz library over there. I said, I don't know that much about jazz. They said, well, go learn. And I did.
But what about this distinction between print critics and radio broadcasters? Because the Jazz Journalist Association encompasses both.
Well, for myself, if I'm actually reviewing a record, I'm sitting there with that album. I'm listening through to it at least once, quite attentively, have it on while I'm doing some other things, let some other aspects of the music seep in. But that is my focus. It's similar to when I'm writing liner notes. I'm pretty focused on that set of music. But when it comes to putting a radio program together, and unless you're doing something like you're doing, and as Ed Beach did, you want to get a lot of variety. So then I find myself listening to music with at least half an ear pointed toward what will work on the radio, or even more than that, what will work in tandem or in relation to something else. Do I hear something in a track from a brand new album that reminds me of a classic album? And if I tie those two things together, does that help make a statement about the progress of the music or one artist's influence on someone else decades later? So there's a different mindset at work. What I tend to do, I have a 6-CD changer. I'll put on 6 new CDs. I'll set it to random, which is the way most people experience the radio. They're just hearing tracks out of order, and see what catches my ear. And I then jot down and think, well, this would be a good one to play on its own. And more so, this would be a good one to play because it relates to something else that happens. So I tend, when I'm listening as a programmer, to hear music a little more broken up, a little scattered, again, which is not only the way most people hear the radio, but I suspect the way many people now listen to music in general in their digital players when they just put it on shuffle and hear a great variety of things. What about you?
Well, first, I listen as somebody who likes music. I mean, my first is, am I enjoying this? Am I having a good time listening to this? So in that sense, I'm still an ordinary person. But professionally, I think I listen first as a radio programmer at this point. In addition to my national syndicated show, I also do local radio programming here in Portland. And I listen for tracks I can play. And sometimes I'll find a track that I really like to where I'll play it multiple times, and I don't get back to the rest of the album. And now here we are in early December, and I'm going back and listening to some of the albums that kind of stood out to me this year, particularly for specific tracks. and listening to the whole album. And sometimes an album that had one standout track doesn't necessarily hold up as one of the 10 best.
Absolutely. That's, I think, frequent. And especially if you're listening first as a radio programmer, the thing that will catch your ear, because you hope it will catch listeners' ears, is the thing that you go back to over and over again, to the exclusion of much of the rest of the album. So yes, listening to a recording in its entirety, and many modern artists are making recordings that are meant to be listened that way, as opposed to 50s, 60s, 70s, when it was just a collection of tracks, I think you have to do it justice that way. So I agree with you entirely. How much different do you think that is from the, quote, general non-professional listener, as you put it?
Well, in the case of my wife, when she likes something, she will play it over and over again until she either stops liking it or gets something else that she's hung up on. Also, I think critics in particular, sometimes when we hear something that may not be immediately appealing to us, but we will spend some time with it. For example, Cecile McLaurin-Salvant's latest album, which is different than what she's been doing before. It's more influenced by kind of show tunes, and it's almost more like kind of an art pop album than a jazz album. Yeah, I had to listen to it a few times before I really respected it, but to really enjoy it, I had to give it a few listens. My wife's not necessarily going to put that time in.
That raises another question, though, because almost invariably, if you listen to something more and more, it starts to become somewhat familiar. And every psychological study and look at behavior has shown that the more familiar you are with something, the more appreciative you often will be of it. So sometimes I find that by listening to an album I didn't care for as much and then listening to it over and over again, it really does grow on me, at which point I have to put myself in your wife's place and say, well, okay, but is this just because I've half memorized it by now? Did I really like it in the first place? That's something that I think also distinguishes non-professional listeners, as you put it, from the people who are writing it and playing it on the radio. But back to the original question, as a print journalist, how do you think you listen to things differently from the way somebody who is just hearing something on the radio and went out and bought the new album and sits down with it?
I'm not sure. I've heard a lot more music than pretty much everybody except you, Neil. I think there are ways I used to approach it that I don't anymore. I'm going to make a confession here. I used to kind of enjoy telling people that music that they really like actually sucks.
I hope you outgrew that soon.
I did outgrow it, but eventually I decided I don't want to have to do this for a living anymore, because the truth is that is the job. If you're nice to everything, your opinion doesn't mean anything. And again, it can explain to people, yes, it's just an opinion. And if you liked it, I'm fine with that. But I do have an informed opinion. The problem now is with Amazon.com and the internet, some young person on there going, OMG, this is awesome, carries the same weight as you or me or Howard Mandel writing an informed opinion on there. One other thing, there's this hipper than now factor of wanting to be out in front and find the next new thing before anybody else.
Isn't one of the points of this kind of exercise to let people know about things that the critic has found that are on the edge, that are pointing the way to the future, that might be the next new thing for people who do not follow it as readily, just as you would do with your jazz list of the top 10?
Yes. And I always felt like that was kind of the good karma of the job of guiding people to music that they're going to really enjoy.
But let's bring this all back to the whole question of how we listen to things differently from people who aren't doing this for a living. And even if we're hearing those things, do we actually listen to them differently? I'm not sure. You mentioned that you and I have heard more music than anybody. Just this past weekend here in Chicago, there was the Catalytic Sound Festival. The Catalytic Sound Festival was happening in cities across America and in Europe. It's a collective catalytic sound of new music, very forward music, some of it pretty out. And I have a friend who comes down from 100 miles away up in Wisconsin to hear things like this and always brings with him a stash of record album covers and CD covers for those artists who are playing to sign. He's a nut about this. He has an amazing collection of this stuff. And he's always got albums that I haven't seen. So at least within that realm, he's listening to more of that music than I am. So I'm never quite comfortable assuming that anybody else is not paying serious attention to the music. Maybe not as much as those of us who get paid to do it, as little as we get paid, but nonetheless, who are certainly in it with their whole heart and soul. And I think that that is one real difference, is that people who are not doing it as a profession, but only as an avocation, as a passionately held hobby, I think that they listen with a certain almost rabid intensity that I know, having heard so much music and written about so much music, I have trouble drumming up. Rarely, I think, to the point that I see some of these folks, these fans, who are just on the edge of their seats because of their clear excitement at hearing something new. I think the difference is that for us, what seems new to other people may not, in fact, be that new. Does that make sense?
Yes. Another thing I'd like to throw in here is that listening to music through the filter of how is this going to come across on the radio can dilute one's taste. And that's you get smooth jazz, et cetera. And, you know,
absolutely.
Lowest common denominator. But it can also refine one's taste. What are we really listening to here that actually communicates the best of what this artist is trying to put out there? I feel that it has refined my taste over the years. How about you?
Well, I agree certainly with that point. So how it's refined my taste? Yeah, I guess I would agree with that too, because it really does. In the case of a limited time program, I do a 2-hour program once a week for the Jazz Across America series, which is on KSDS in San Diego, even though I'm here in Chicago. And in that limited span of time, I'm very conscious of what I can squeeze in. So I find myself making some pretty hard choices.
If I want to listen to your show, can I go to KSDS's website?
Oh, yeah. It's Jazz 88 in San Diego. And my program's on Thursday night. On Monday, they have Kenny Washington, the drummer from New York, who does a show from there. They have hosts from Kansas City and from Detroit and from New Orleans, Monday through Friday.
I think that it's a privilege to have these kinds of jobs. I mean, for one thing, there's some perks. We don't have to go buy albums the way, I mean, I still do go buy albums that are outside of the stuff that I get sent in the mail. But beyond that, it's a privilege to be part of this cultural conversation, both as a writer and as a programmer, in terms of what actually constitutes good music and reflects the best of what is being made now around the world, and specifically in this culture of American music, or even more specifically, African-American music.
So let me ask you something. When you do your program for the local station, what do you hear from people vis-a-vis what you are playing and what they are hearing? Because that's kind of the question. How do we hear things, listen to things differently from other folks?
Well, that changed a bit during the pandemic because we were having to program from home and pre-record our shows.
Okay.
Now I'm back in the station and people can call me on the phone. And most of the time they tell me they like what I'm playing and they thank me for playing it.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about the distinction that we've kind of glossed over, which is the difference between radio people and print people. Because I think that for the most part, most of the radio people lean very much, as you and I do when we're on the radio, toward things that are more populist. And those are the people who will look at you when you're writing about Wadada Leo Smith and say, what are you talking about? So, Rick, let me ask you, we've talked a lot about the, quote, professional listener being writers as well as radio hosts, vis-a-vis folks who don't do that for a living. We haven't talked as much about the dichotomy between writers and radio hosts. So my sense of this is that the people who are full-time radio hosts, and I mean no disrespect, do what you and I do on the occasion that we're doing radio, but they do it more as a lifestyle, which is home in more on things that are more accessible and less of the things that are pushing the envelope. They'll play new albums because you want to keep things current on a radio program. You want people to know what's out there. But in terms of really glomming on to the new Mary Halverson album or the new Matthew Shipp album or Wadada Leo Smith, the octogenarian who's been making far out music for 60 years. I find very often that if you're a writer and you're talking to somebody who's a full-time radio host, they don't really cotton to that so much. Now, I'm making a big generalization. This is just largely within my own experience. And it could be because they don't really have time to listen to everything and you concentrate on the thing that you need to do for the job at hand. But if you run into that, where as a writer putting together these lists or comparing the writer's top 10 lists with the radio host top 10 list, you see a real divide between the more avant-garde, the more forward-facing things, as opposed to the mainstream, we'll call it.
I think so, although there are also radio hosts on non-commercial radio stations that have a special focus on avant-garde music. Here's a specific example. Myra Milford's album that came out this year that Mary Halverson is on, it's all right. Women on there. And right. That album is probably going to get some votes in our JJA Critics Poll and formerly NPR Poll, whatever it's called now.
I know it is.
But I have not been able to find a track on there that I can play without worrying about people tuning out.
In terms of the general tenor of things, do you find that there are probably fewer radio hosts who would be even familiar with, cognizant of Myra Milford than you would find in the print community? And again, this means no disrespect. It's simply a function, I believe, of the different needs of the different jobs.
Of course. And, you know, you don't hear Myra Milford on SiriusXM's Real Jazz channel. At least I never have.
No, and you won't. And there are people I've spoken with who are in positions of doing syndicated programs for a mainstream audience who may know Myra Milford's name, but will not be familiar with that album. So we agree, and without, again, saying one is better than the other, but we agree that for the most part, the people who are not worried about satisfying their listeners' tastes tend to be a little more extreme in their openness to new things. When I say this about the difference between hosts and writers, I'm speaking personally. There was a period when I was doing radio pretty extensively, five nights a week, and doing less writing, and I found myself completely losing touch with most of the newer, more progressive, more avant-garde things that were going on around me and coming out. I simply didn't get a chance to pay attention to those as I was looking for one audience. So this is why I think, from my own experience, being sort of two people, this is why I think that radio can tend to make people a little more populist. And the writers who are not worried so much about that can tend to be a little more adventurous. And again, I'm not saying one is better than the other.
No, I had that same experience.
I will say that it took me a while to get there, because when I was just out of college doing a late night program for a classical music station that was renting out the time late at night, I would put on a 12-minute avant-garde track. And I think about it now and think, what the heck were you thinking? But I was an evangelist for that music. I was saying, you have to listen to this. And, you know, over the time you understand, you learn that telling people they have to do something is not the best way to get them to enjoy doing something.
Kind of the flip side of that, you know, I went through probably similar to you, a jazz immersion phase in the 1970s. And there was a period there where if it wasn't bebop or avant-garde or Bob Marley, I wasn't really too interested in it, both as a radio programmer and as a critic. And now, when I go back and listen to some of those early 70s CTI albums, they sound better to me now than they did at the time, because I was kind of being a snob about it.
Yeah.
They sound pretty good. You know, there's great solos on there. Joe Henderson, Freddie Hubbard,
yep.
George Benson. You know, we're dealing with opinions here. You know, you and I may not agree on a specific highly well-reviewed album that came out in any given year, but we have what I think would be considered informed opinions, even though we may disagree.
That's host Rick Mitchell in conversation with Neil Tesser. I'm Susan Brink for the Jazz Journalists Association. Thank you for listening to The Buzz, a podcast produced by the JJA. We release new episodes regularly on all the major platforms. To learn more about us, go to jjanews.org. This episode was edited by Wiz Petta. The John Michaels composition, Big Vic, is our theme music. Toodaloo!